It's the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio. It's the Food Talk Show on Channel Radio with me, Paul Andrews, and the lovely Sue Nelson. Hello, Sue.
Hello, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Yes, very good, very good. And I'm quite excited because it's peanut butter today, and I know that's one of your favourites as well,
but
I'm really quite into peanut butter.
I'm so excited because I normally don't get to try anything on this show because you bring me things I can't do.
Well, we deliberately have booze, as you know, and things that I know you don't like, but this time I know you like peanut butter.
I love peanut butter.
The peanut butter is supplied by Perrins Fine Foods, and they make their own, they roast it all. We're going to find out all about that from Neil Samuel. He's sitting here in the studio waiting patiently, and we've got three tubs of different sorts of peanut butter, which I'm dying to taste, but we'll wait till it's Neil's turn. And we're also talking to Greg Wells, and he's organising the London Craft Beer Festival, and he's going to explain what that festival's all about. And also we're going to talk a little bit about craft beer. I know you don't like craft beer, but I love it, and it's getting more and more popular, so we're going to have a little chat about that.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be a great show.
As usual. And then we've got a little bit of We Hate Heston in the middle.
Yeah.
Have you been watching the Olympics?
I have watched a little bit. I'm not a big fan, I have to say, for all kinds of reasons, but I have been watching a little bit.
But we are very good, aren't we, in the UK at City Down Esports. That's often where, like last Olympics, the London Olympics, all the medals we got were City Downy ones for gold.
So why are you looking at me when you're saying that?
Well, what I'm saying is you should be more interested because a lot of them, you know, if you sit down, it's probably more up your street, that sort of sport is what I was thinking.
Is that right?
Yeah, so like, you know, canoeing and slalom and, you know, the sort of shooting stuff and cycling. We're really good at sitting down and doing sport.
Yeah, it's funny how cyclically. See what I did there? It's funny how things have changed though. In terms of, we always used to be pretty good at scooping up medals in things like dinghy sailing and
that's City Downy.
Yeah, exactly. See? Yeah, and then shooting, which is laying down to a large extent.
We're even better at that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, we won a couple of medals in gymnastics last night, which is the first time in 108 years.
They're incredible, those gymnasts. Mm. And I was watching the diving, and I just can't believe what those guys are doing. You know, synchronized and diving on the board at the same time and being completely in tune all the way. You know, doing like three somersaults and hitting the water exactly the same time. It's incredibly, you know, clever, and they must work so hard.
Absolutely.
So really good that those boys won gold for us yesterday. It's great.
Just while we're talking about that, did you see the Facebook video that did the rounds of the men's synchronized beer drinking team?
No, I didn't see that.
That was quite funny.
That's good.
That was good.
Well, interestingly, they're having a few problems in Rio in terms of food and drink, which is quite relevant to us, isn't it? And they're getting huge criticisms for the fact that there's not enough food and drink there. So spectators are coming, probably pretty hot, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And there's no food and drink. And they're queuing for 50 minutes, Paul, to you know, just to get a drink and stuff, which is not good, is it?
That's not good, is it?
And part of the reason, I think, is that they've got this system where you go to one cashier to pay, and then you have to queue up for another line to actually then collect your food. So, of course, because people are paying, then they're not going away because they're thinking, well, I paid for it, I might as well queue up for it.
Yeah.
But hundreds of people are just queuing.
It's not good, is it?
It isn't. And getting the organisation right, I think they might be struggling a little bit, just to get some of those things right.
They've got a few problems, haven't they? Have you seen the green swimming pool?
Yes, that was quite good.
Yeah.
I don't know what that was. I don't know why it's green. Did you find out?
Yeah, my swimming pool goes green quite often. It's algae.
You've got a swimming pool?
I have got a swimming pool.
I thought you were rich. I wasn't quite sure.
I have got a swimming pool, and it does go green. And it goes green because it's got the wrong pH balance.
Ah, okay. Mm. Some people are saying it was because of what they were, you know, the lotions they were putting on their skin was turning...
What they were doing in the pool.
That was rubbish then, was it? I suppose it was.
I have to tell you, many, many years ago when I worked on a speaking circuit, I spoke with Adrian Morehouse.
Oh, he's lovely.
If you remember.
Yeah.
Really yes. Lovely guy. Yeah. Fabulous guy. And he used to tell some hilarious stories about what went into a swimming pool in an international competition, let me tell you.
I don't want to know about that. I'm going to talk about beer instead.
I would.
Yeah. So, as you know, we've got Greg Wells of the London Craft Beer Festival coming on later. And we've had some great beer producers on the programme, Paul. Do you remember we had Toast Ale a couple of weeks ago?
I do, yeah.
Those lovely people who take bread that hasn't been used and they recycle it and toast it. They actually do toast it and put it in ale. And that I tasted that. That was very, very nice. And
I did notice you tasted
it. Yeah. And do you remember, this is a good few months back, we had the Caveman Brewery and James Hayward came on and he was making that beer in the cellar of the Georgian Dragon in Swanscombe. Do you remember?
Yes, right, I do remember
that's real too. That's real craft beer, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely.
But according to the government, Britain has returned to its rightful role as a global brewing powerhouse.
Right.
We sort of lost the, you know, sort of global award really for beer and brewing, and we've sort of now got it back.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because Kent, especially, was the home of hops in the country. There were other hop fields available, but Kent was the epicentre of the brewing industry for over 1,000 years.
Well, it seems like we're returning in the UK to becoming that sort of centre for it. And new figures from the British Beer and Pub Association revealed there are now more than 1,400 breweries in Britain, and a lot of those are sort of microbreweries. Mm. And particularly in the past 2 years, has seen breweries opening up at a rate of 3 a week.
It's incredible, isn't it? And you've got this whole phenomena of micro pubs as well. And next to my gaff in Canterbury, we've got the Foundry, which is a micro brewery, but it's also a pub. So it's a brewery in a pub.
Very good. And I like all that.
Yeah.
And as real ale, sort of surges in popularity, it continues to outperform the rest of the beer market. 1 in 6 pints of beer sold is in a pub is now cask ale, while the boring stuff, you know, like John Smith and Tetley's, that's what you shouldn't say that, should
lager.
You?
Lager.
They're in decline. You know, we shouldn't really say that,
but
interesting is that, you know, I think people are beginning to taste the difference. I think that's the interesting thing. And 25% of British adults, so that's like 13 million people, said they've consumed a craft beer over the past 6 months.
Blimey.
So it's really obviously becoming popular. So really interested to speak to Greg. He's running this London Craft Beer Festival. So I'm going to ask him lots of questions about why he thinks beer is so popular.
Cool. Well, we're looking forward to that.
We are looking forward to that. And I'm guessing that we've got beer and peanut butter. So I'm trying to work out what your tunage will be this week.
I've got some cheesy tunage. I have got some cheesy tunage to play. Do you know what? I actually struggle. Hey, stop cheating. She's cheating, listener. She's looking over my shoulder to see what my tune is.
I can't see it.
Do you know, it's interesting, though. I actually found quite a few tunes about nuts of one kind or another. That wasn't a problem. But I struggled awfully with beer.
Surely there's lots of beer songs, isn't there?
No.
You'd think there'd be drinking songs.
There's drinking songs. There's loads of cider songs. Cider, no problem. Yeah. Wine, even, no problem.
Yes, but the Dean Martin song comes to mind.
Mm, exactly. But and you know, the classic red wine and stuff like that. Yep. But beer, it was very hard to come by. So I actually plumped for a Jeff Beck number, would you believe?
Okay, well, we have got, you know, just in case you're really struggling, we have got the chili burrito people doing We Hate Heston. Does that help? No, you're going to
go for beer. No, I've got a song. I've got a song to play. I'm just explaining that it isn't entirely beer related because it's actually a song called I've Been Drinking.
Here we go then.
Do you want to go for it?
Listen to that, yeah, and then we'll talk to Greg.
Let's go for it.
I'm drinking again. Thinking of when you left me, and that was so long ago. I've been having a few right here by my side. Well, I'm making the rounds and setting them up. A total stranger to myself, I'm just making a fool of myself. I'm just hoping that you'll come right back once on me. But I know that there's no second time. Tell a joke, but, it's but after all is said and done, who's gonna laugh? Who's gonna laugh at a broken heart? I've been drinking again and thinking of when you left me, and that weren't so long. You were right by my side.
And we're now joined on the phone, hopefully, by Greg Wells. Hello, Greg.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Really good, really good.
Good, thanks.
Busy. We're in full build mode on the festival today, but good.
Fantastic.
Good, good. Before we talk about the London Craft Beer Festival, which we want to hear all about, and we want to tell everybody about it so they go starting tomorrow, we've just been talking a little bit about craft beer. In your opinion, Greg, why is it becoming so popular?
Why is craft beer becoming popular? I think in for the same reasons as there's been a lot of changes within wider food and drink culture. Prominently there, it's around quality, and it's around provenance, and it's about people's tastes developing. People, at all levels, you don't have to be a specialist, can discernibly tell a difference now between a craft beer, a beer that's made with all malt and uses a lot of hops, and something that's mass manufactured and, to be honest, is flat and devoid of flavor. Consistent, but flat and devoid of flavor. So I think people like that. People like the taste. It's part of it. And that's what's really driving it. It's all about the beer.
I think you're right. I think you hit the nail on the head a bit there as well, Greg. It's not just with beer, is it? There's a lot of food and drink now where people are starting to move away from mass-produced stuff to more artisan and stuff that's produced, as you say, with the providence of the ingredients being known.
But, Paul, I used to think that was, you know, about price and people being, you know, better off and managing to do that. Mm. But I think what Greg's saying is that people are now doing it based on taste.
Yeah, absolutely.
And actually they're looking at, you know, tasting stuff and thinking, oh, actually, this isn't really
like
very good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just mass-produced. I don't like it.
And it's
yeah.
because they're beginning to compare, whereas before you didn't really have much choice, I think. I think it's really interesting that it's not just about price. Mm. I also think, I don't know if this is true as well, Greg, I also think with craft beer, you know, in London you can go and pay £7 for a glass of wine in a pub. But actually, craft beer is nowhere near that. But it's really, really good, isn't it? So maybe price isn't quite such a dominating factor as it used to be.
No, I don't think it is. I think a lot of what you've just talked about there is probably more around the idea of value. Mm. And while a craft beer is a little bit more than a mass-produced beer, actually what you get and what you're paying for is more for the ingredients that's in it. And I think people do realize that, like chicken fillet breast from your local supermarket versus a butcher. The butcher's going to be that little bit more, but you can discernibly tell the difference. So you can with like a tomato that's been grown in 2 weeks in a greenhouse in Kent versus when you buy something in season and is actually grown on the vine. And I think for a long time our food culture has been dominated by ease and convenience and brand, and actually now it's much more around taste and people wanting value from their stuff. And I think that's part of what craft beer is about. I think there's another big thing is that for me, and in all of that, again, part of the wider culture is, I think people kind of vote or express a bit of their politics through their consumer choices these days. And I think people do like to buy local and they do like to support their local brewery, and the fact that these people are more invested in the community, et cetera, and work in these different, you know, communities of food and drink and all other parts of it, that's appealing too. And
yeah, I think so. I think people used to think that didn't really matter because the big boys were so dominant that actually you making those choices didn't really matter. And I think now that people are understanding that making those choices is making a difference, because you know Tesco's local and Sainsbury's local and all that moving into small high streets and towns and villages and edging out local producers. I think people do realise that they can make a difference by making a choice about where they spend their money. So it's quite interesting to see that happening. Can I ask you about craft beer? Is it a guy thing, or are you seeing more women drinking craft beer?
No, I don't think it is a guy thing. I mean, probably beer as a whole is a little bit more guy oriented, but craft beer, actually, the beers that are made within what we call a craft sector are so varied, and they actually have way more flavour and aroma, and actually there's a much broader and more balanced base. Our festival, for instance, is something like 35-40% women, which is kind of unheard of for a beer festival, and that's because of the beers that are involved. And equally, if you go to bars that sell craft, it's much more balanced from a gender point of view. And then at the other end of it, also a lot of the people working within microbreweries are female too. It isn't just a guy thing.
That's good. Cool. That's good. So we've got the London Craft Beer Festival. I believe it's starting tomorrow. Have I got that right?
That's correct.
You've got over 30 of the world's best breweries serving over 250 types of beer. Tell us all about it.
Each,
yeah. tell us all about it.
I was always a big beer fan, and actually worked in brand consultancy for some big alcohol companies. But was always a fan of the microbrew scene. Had done a bit of travelling, and then 4 or 5 years ago, it all started really taking off in the UK in a big way. A bit longer than 4 or 5 years ago, but that's when I got involved and spoke to my friend. And the next thing, we were like, cool. Well, there's not really a beer festival that represents this new movement in beer in this country. There's the kind of camera beer festivals, which are slightly different, and then it felt like there was a way to contribute to this changing culture and this changing way that people consume and drink beer, and the fact that it is more balanced and it's younger and a bit cooler and a bit more creative. So we started a beer festival to do that, and now we're going into our fourth year. It gets huge support. People travel from all over the world to come to it, from as far as Japan and Norway, Latin America, and they all want to come and experience London beer, UK beer, and European beer.
Wow,
that is incredible, isn't it? Amazing.
Can you Greg, can you give us a feel for how the festival takes place? You know, it's obviously in London, but you know, is it spread out or is it in one place? How tell us the mechanics of it.
I should explain that. Yeah, one of the things we wanted to change up, which hadn't been done in the UK before, was the way that you experience a festival as a customer.
Yeah,
I kind of based it on what I would like to do. So we hold our beer set. It's all in one place, and we hold it over 5 sessions over 3 days. And you pay a ticket for a session. So a ticket for a session is just shy of £40. But when you come to that session, you're given a glass and a very nicely produced little book telling you about the brewers. And then once you're in, it's a bit more like a wine event where you just taste the beer. So you have these small pours. It's essentially a small taster. It's about a sixth of a pint. And you just go around and explore. It makes for a much better festival experience, because the traditional UK beer festival would have been done on kind of transactions. So I'd walk in, I'd buy a glass, I'd buy some tokens, I'd look at my tokens, I'd work out which beer I want to buy, I'd go and choose that beer in a pint or a half. We didn't want that. Because craft beer is all about flavor and discovery and learning. We wanted people, once they were in, to be able to just kind of create, you know, roots almost through the beer themselves. Like, oh, I'm going to drink pails for a bit, and oh, I've tried this and new.
It's a really good idea, because I mean, I can't drink more than about a pint of beer, because it's so, you know, there's such a lot of it for me. It's, you know, such a volume, and even if you're really going for it, you're not going to probably manage more 6 and 7 pints. So, you know, to be able to just taste, I think, is great. And with 250 beers, I always think craft beer, you get, you know, sort of very pale, you know, you can get some very sort of pale ale type all the way through to some really strong stouts, you know, so almost from, you know, white to black in terms of colouring, let alone taste profile. So the ability to be able to go and taste all the different ones is fantastic.
It sounds to me it's based more on a profile of like wine tasting than what used to happen with beer festivals years ago. We live in Kent, out in the country, and the beer festivals we have here was just some big tent in a field, and then you go and get hammered.
And you fall over in the mud. And then
you fall over
home.
In the mud, and then you go home, and everybody go, that was brilliant, should we go next year?
yeah, exactly. That's the kind of the old school way of doing a beer festival. So we didn't want that. And it's a testament to the whole culture, again, around beer is that, and I think this is broader in the UK too, is that people are looking for quality to drink, less volume. That might be slightly higher ABV beers if it's the style of beer they want, but much more in control. And actually, what we've noticed is over the last few years is actually the volume of beer we get through is less. So whole beer culture is changing.
Yeah, that's a good thing, isn't it? And again, we're talking about food as well. It's a sort of flight to quality as opposed to volume and cheapness. Mm. You've got these 30 of the world's best breweries. Can you say, Greg, out of that, who your favourite brewer is? Are you allowed to say?
Aha. You know what? The two questions I can never, ever answer, not because I don't want to, but because I really struggle, is everyone says, what's your favourite beer of the festival?
Yeah.
And we have 250, and they're also varied in different styles. That I find it really, really, really hard to say that.
How diplomatic.
I guess that what Greg's saying though is personal taste, isn't it? Because you know,
it's so subjective. It's like, what's your favorite song? And you think you might have one, but then you think of another. If there was one big brewery in this country, or certainly in London with a London Craft Beer Festival, so if there was one brewery that I just had never tasted anything as good as this ever before, it was the Colonel Brewery in southeast London, in Bermondsey.
Right, okay.
They're very, very small. In so many respects, they represent the artisan nature of this whole beer movement. And they just make mind-blowingly good beer, and they're If I was a football manager, they're the first name on my team sheet.
Okay.
It doesn't have a flavour of vinegar by any chance, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Because Bermondsey was always famous for its Sarsen's vinegar factory.
Right, okay. It's also got a huge brewing history. I mean, all the streets around there are called Porter and everything else, and there's all of the big brewing history. And today, there's at least more than a handful of breweries brewing out of there, and the Colonel are a fantastic
example. So you've got somebody really, really small like that, and then I know you've got BrewDog there. What do you think of the BrewDog success, bearing in mind that that's how they started, really, and now it's the most phenomenal brand, huge across the world. What's your thoughts on that brand?
I think BrewDog are a really exciting company, and they have paved the way for so much of what's happened in beer in this country, and they continue to do that. Mm. Craft beer is just about beer quality. It doesn't really, to me, what I like about it is beer. So the way that each company is so individual, and BrewDog do their thing and do it in their way, and they're bombastic and they're really exciting because of that, I think they've got a great future and will continue to grow. So yeah, we have BrewDog. We've worked them all the time. Actually, if you look at the American market, who are 20, 30 years ahead of us, we've got a brewer over. He's actually flying over from Sierra. He started it in the late 80s, called Sierra Nevada. A guy called Steve Grossman. He's coming. Now, they're like 20 times the size of BrewDog.
Wow. But
they're still totally independent, They use the hops and barley and malts from their own farms. They still continually putting new beers out on the market. So there's just a great scope. But as you say,
Greg, it's about quality, though. They're not going to get away with that, and they're not going to grow unless they keep that quality up, are they?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. So you can be a small guy, and that's the way you want to run your business and live your life as a brewer. You can push, but as long as the beer stays cool, then that's all we're doing.
Okay, well, we're joined here by Neil Samuel, who makes the most amazing peanut butter. And you really must talk to Neil and get peanut butter in your beer festival. But I know it's not just about beer, isn't it? You've got music and you've got food at the festival.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we wanted to make it a bit of a party, so we play a lot of music. That's a bit of our background too, and then obviously food as well. Like, you just need to have good quality food when you drink it, and it makes it so much more enjoyable. So we work with a lot of local producers. We design a menu ourselves and bring on our own team of chefs. But yeah.
So do you have like food stalls there?
We have a few different stalls, but we actually work with some chefs we work with to create the menus, and we man it all. So it's all our stuff. We do an onglet grill, we do some pulled meats, we have some dogs, we have some vegetarian options. So yeah, we do it all.
That's good. So if anybody wants to know about the London Craft Beer Festival, they need to go on to londoncraftbeerfestival.co.uk. And as you say, it's back on its fourth year. I hope the weather's going to be good this weekend. They say it is. So that's a plus,
yeah,
isn't it?
Which
is
great. Okay. We're good.
Which is great. And I know you cater for your food for vegans and vegetarians too. So, while you're mentioning meat, there's something for everybody, isn't there, truly, when they go, hopefully.
Indeed. We've got some gluten-free beers on as well.
Wow. And I hear that you have a bit of a Scandinavian invasion going on. What's that about?
Yeah, right. Okay, so, one of the big areas in Europe that's really this craft beer movement or modern beer movement has really caught hold on is in Scandinavia. So we have very talented breweries from Sweden called Omnipolo. We've got a couple from Norway, Lervig and Aegir. We have one from Copenhagen called Tuol. And then we have some guys from Finland who actually went across the Baltic and set up in Estonia. So they just really leading the way in Europe in many respects in terms of some of the quality of the beer and the inventiveness of the beer that's coming out of there. We used to work with another brand called Mikela. They did make some incredible beers too. So it's just a really strong brewing culture that they've got going on across the Scandinavian cities at the moment.
So that's an incredible event. You've got visitors from all around the world. You've got brewers literally from all around the world and some really exciting things going on. So we would urge anybody who's anywhere near London at the weekend, it's at Oval Space, go on the website, which I say again is londoncraftbeerfestival.co.uk, and go and have a lovely weekend tasting fantastic craft beer.
Sounds good.
Please, I'd love to see you here.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Greg. I'm sure you've got loads to do. There must be loads and loads and loads to do. And say, great that the weather's going to be okay. So good luck with it.
Good to talk to you, Greg.
Thank you so much, guys.
Take care.
Have a great weekend.
See you.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So good that they've got the weather, isn't it? Fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's hope it holds out for them.
So I'm just going to ask Neil, as he's here. Are you a craft? Do you like craft beer?
I do actually like craft beer. Do you know, it's been a long time since I've actually had beer of any description or alcohol, actually. And I used to be in a band, and that was the times when I used to enjoy my beer after a gig. So
nice and thirsty.
You know, so it's been a long time since I've had one, but that has got my interest for it again.
I think if it's craft beer and you know it's been lovingly created and it's really got somebody's personality in it, it's quite special, isn't it? It's good.
Indeed,
it's
yes. Good.
Well, we're going to talk to you later in about 7 or 8 minutes about peanut butter and also the rest of Perrin's Fine Foods. We've got a little We Hate Heston clip here.
We have.
And this is when, because I didn't actually go, but this is when you went to the exhibition, the Free From exhibition, wasn't it?
It was the Allergy and Free From show at the Olympia Exhibition Centre. It was about 5 weeks ago now, and we had a fabulous time there, and we interviewed loads of people. And what we've got here is a pre-recorded that we did of Shambui's chili burritos.
Chili, you love chili.
I do like.
Did you taste them? I presume you tasted this.
I did. I do like a chili burrito as well, I have to say.
While you're doing that, I'm going to make some toast. Actually, because if we're going to taste,
toast.
I'm thinking
if I knew that, I would have put a bit of toast.
No,
on.
I think if we're going to taste some peanut butter, we better put some toast on. So I'll go and get some toast made, and we'll listen to what were they called, Paul?
Shambui. Shambui's chili burritos with Christy.
Perfect.
Let's go for it. Huh?
Okay.
So I'm at the Allergy and Free From show with Mahersh and Nishma, who are of Shambui's Catering, and they are a vegan catering company based in northwest London, and they're a husband and wife team. So how long have you been doing this?
We've been doing this for about 10 years now, and it started off at the Bristol Veg Fest, and then we just carried on from there. We just enjoyed it so much, so we decided to carry on from there.
Okay, so you've been catering for 10 years, and you don't just do catering, you also run classes, did you say?
Yes, the classes started last year, and because I was doing loads of food demonstrations, loads of people are wondering how to go vegan and what to eat as a vegan person. So from my background, because I was born in Kenya, and I always had like fresh fruit and veg available, and all my fruit just came from the trees or from plants. It wasn't accessible to have packaged foods, or packaged foods were really expensive. So everything was made fresh. So, and then going vegan is a perfect way, you know, to eat your fresh food and vegetables. You get your 5 a day or more than 5 a day.
So it's not as difficult as people seem to think it is?
Not at all. It's not difficult at all. At the show, you can see vegan alternatives for everything. Like on our stand, we have vegan cheesecakes. We got vegan chocolate fudge slices, we got vegan bean burritos.
I have to say, I had the cheesecake earlier and it was delicious. And also, what are you going to be making for us now? Because this smells really good.
The really lovely aroma is from the natural vegetables itself, so from garlic, from onions, from the spices, herbs. So they give really good flavour. So I'm making a Mexican bean mix, which has got it's got olive oil, and it's onions, garlic, organic kidney beans, organic tomato passata, tomato-based.
That's okay. So it's all organic as well, and it's also, there's no nuts in it, there's no gluten in it, there's no soy in it.
There's no the soy only comes from the vegan cheese.
Okay.
But you can make it without the cheese, and it will be soy free. Yep. So it's got olive oil, onions, peppers, garlic, mixed herbs, tomatoes, organic tomatoes and organic kidney beans. And that's it. That's the simple ingredients.
So really good for anyone with any sort of allergy or any sort of food aversion, and also smells really good. Okay, so what are we going to be doing with the bean mix?
So I'm putting the bean mix in a tortilla wrap. I'm going to line it up. So it makes a really nice... When you wrap it up, it's nice and tight. I've added about a couple of spoonfuls of bean mix, and now I'm going to add some vegan cheese to it.
What vegan cheese are you using? Is this homemade?
The vegan cheese is ready-made. It's readily available from all the shops. Different people have different tastes to it. So you can use a cheese of your preference. This is soy-based cheese, which I really like, and it melts really well as well.
But you could obviously also use like a nut cheese or
they're brilliant homemade cheeses these days. Loads of cheese recipes online. Yeah. So you just have to find something that suits your flavor, and then you can make it. And so there's so many like cashew-based cheeses as well these days.
There's a lot of choice, a lot available. So this looks really good. You've folded up your wrap, you've popped your cheese on, and you've just popped it in a sandwich maker. Is it, what would you call this, a panini press?
A panini press. So it's got two hot plates on both the sides, from bottom and from top. So it's getting cooked on both sides. And the cheese will melt really nicely, and it will just stick to the wrap so it doesn't open up. And you just pop it in a bag, and off you go. You know, it's great lunch to take it to work with you. Yeah.
Okay, great. So how long would you pop this in here?
Probably just like less than a minute or 2 minutes, and then it's done. You know?
So it's really good, simple cooking. I mean, people are eating these as like a meal. You've got like a nice, just a panini, which you can, or a wrap that you can buy. You can obviously get gluten-free ones if you need to, or you can get regular ones. And you've made up your bean mix, which is the tasty flavour and the aroma that's coming in. And pop some of that in and a bit of cheese on top. Really simple. And then warm it through for a minute.
The bean mix doesn't even take that long to make. It takes literally about probably 10 to 15 minutes. And then the great thing with the bean mix is you can have it with rice. So you can have rice, you can have your salads. And it'll make a nice meal. So even if you're gluten-free, you can still enjoy your meal. And you're having a satisfying, nourishing, tasty meal.
Yeah, really versatile, really simple, and really tasty. That's what we like to hear. So do you think this is done now?
It'll take a little while to warm up. Yeah. So it depends, like, how, if you have to pre-warm your panini maker, mm-hmm. and then it will be done.
Okay.
So I think
just a minute more. Yeah. Okay. Can I try a bit of the bean mix?
Yeah, you can try the...
I'll try it once it's open. Yeah. I can't have the panini, the wrap, okay, but that's fine.
So,
there
you go.
Thank you. I can definitely say that the bean mix is delicious. It's really saucy and quite rich as well, but it's got a nice amount of spice to it.
And it's not like oily. It's not oily.
No, it's not greasy at all.
So, like, it just shows, like, vegan food doesn't have to be unhealthy, like, doesn't have to be high in oil or fats or anything like that.
Well, essentially, it's fruits and vegetables, isn't it?
It is, and plants do not contain any cholesterol.
So it should be the healthiest diet, really, and that doesn't mean that you can't be creative with it or that it can't be easy.
If you look at all the salads that we can get, you know, like, all the different flavour combinations that we do, it's amazing, you know, like the flavors just from plants that you can get. So the salads are so colorful. So same way, your food will be really colorful as well.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, this smells amazing. It looks amazing.
Ready to try?
Yep. I'm gonna let Jeremy try this if that's okay.
It's really like oozing out. Is it the cheese?
It does look delicious. It smells really good as well. Like the toasted bread. Is it? It's a bit hot.
That's delicious. And I haven't had cheese for about 5 years. So this is, I think I might become addicted to this cheese now. Thanks for that.
Okay, so good. So Jeremy's happy. And we've had a lovely little session. Thank you so much. So that's Shamboos, and they do catering all over London?
Catering, and we also do like plant-based cookery classes as well.
And cookery classes.
So we have a class coming up in September, Indian vegan cookering class. I'm doing a cookery demonstration at VegFest UK in London, which is going to be in Olympia. And I'm going to do another one, which is called Indo-Oriental Fusion at JW3 in Finchley Road in London. So there are lots of places that you can see me. And our website is www.shamboos, which is spelled shambhus.co.uk. So if you want to sign up for any email listings of where we're going to be, please do sign up.
So there you go, Shamboos Chili Burritos from the Allergy and Free From show.
That's just the sort of thing you'd need on a Friday night, I think. You know, when you've had a really hard day at work, I know you don't drink wine, go home, have a glass of wine and then have something like that. It's Friday night for me is like spicy night.
I could have that instead of a kebab, couldn't I?
You could have anything instead of a kebab. Really, Paul, what can I say? So we're going to talk peanut butter. Mm. We've got Neil Samuel from Perrins Fine Food. His actual company is called The Exotic Food and Spice Company, but the brand, if you're searching for it, is Perrins Fine Foods. Mm. And it's a family-run business, and their flagship product is pure peanut butter. And as you know, peanut butter is really popular at the moment because it's high in protein and it's used quite a lot of for people who work out quite a lot and for general health benefits. And I know you love it, Paul. So you'll be pleased to know that researchers at Harvard Medical School found that if you eat one tablespoon of peanut butter 5 days a week, you can reduce your risk of heart attack or stroke by up to 44%.
Wow.
And this is probably good for you, Paul. It provides provides protection against Alzheimer's.
You up?
Exactly. It also lowers cholesterol, and it maintains strong and healthy muscles. And just to give you a few peanut butter stats, Britain shell out. I love that. Did you get that, Paul? Did you see what I did there? Britain shell
Top
out
punning.
More than £1 million a week on peanut butter. £1 million a week
on peanut butter. Not on peanuts, on peanut butter.
Peanut butter alone. Mm. In America, peanut butter sales are more than $1 billion a year. Mm. So we've got a bit of catching up to do. 25th of January 2015 was the first ever National Peanut Butter Day. And I know you love peanut butter, but it takes about 500 peanuts just to make a normal jar.
Does it really?
It's packed full. And if you use the main brands of peanut butter, you know, these sort of cheaper ones, mass-produced ones, they don't really have that lovely, rich, nutty, peanutty flavour. It's a taste of its own. For me, it's not that peanutty. And that's because they tend to use these cheap, low-grade peanuts and also quite a bit of sugar and salt. How many times do we hear that?
I know.
And more importantly, they use palm oil, which is very, very cheap. And lots of environmental groups hate products with palm oil because it has led to the clearing of forests in parts of Indonesia and Malaysia.
Sure.
And you know those lovely orangutans? It's significantly losing their natural habitat. So if you feel strongly about things like that, you know, check if a product's got palm oil, because you're contributing to that if you're eating products with palm oil. Now, I know that Perrins Fine Foods import only the finest quality peanuts. They roast them in small batches and they use rapeseed oil, of course. And then once any excess rapeseed oil is removed and they've cooled down, they literally go straight into the grinder and go straight into the tub. So I'm very excited about tasting these.
Come on, get on with it. Get on with it. I want to taste this.
No, I'm going to make you wait. So Neil, welcome.
Hello.
And this is your flagship product. You're very proud of it, aren't you?
It is. We're very proud of it. Yes, indeed.
Yeah. So should we start off by tasting or should we talk about it first?
Let's taste.
Okay, let me explain what I've got in front of me then. I've got the normal... Hold on, Paul. I've got the normal peanut butter, which is unsalted. And it's a lovely jar here, and it's literally got 98% peanuts, and the rest is rapeseed oil, and that is all that's in there. So fabulous. It should taste fabulous. I've just made some toast. I've spread that on some toast for you. Go on then, Paul. See what you think of that. The next one I've got, while Paul's crunching away on a piece of toast, is chili nut butter, which I've never seen before. And this has got chili powder in it, and it just looks exactly the same as any peanut butter. So it'll be interesting to see what Paul makes of that, because he loves chili. What's the first one like? I'm going to taste it.
That was horrible.
What was it like?
It's absolutely fabulous. I'll tell you the first thing I noticed, the difference between that and mass-produced, you know, supermarket peanut butter. It wasn't clawy. It wasn't clingy. Mass-produced peanut butter tends to stick to the roof of your mouth. Mm. That doesn't at all. It's got a fabulous consistency to it. It's just peanuts. It's peanuts.
My
on
My friend
toast,
used to say that was clarty. She used to say if that sticks, it's not clarty.
Right. Okay.
I don't know if that's an actual word. Not sure it is.
I don't know what it means. Can I have another bite?
Yeah, I think the texture is really interesting, and God, it is peanutty. It's got that, and it's roast peanuts, not just peanuts. That's very, very, very nice. I'm not tasting it on bread. Paul is.
You can
I'm
have just, a bite I'm, of my toast.
No,
if
it's
you
okay.
Want.
I'm just eating it straight out of the jar. That's very good. I know you're dying to go on to the chili peanut butter. You know, I quite like chili, but I don't like chili too hot, so I'm slightly worried about this. So you go ahead and
do you want me to
first.
Taste it first?
Yeah, do a little bit of
tasting. I haven't finished my first one yet.
Well, you will finish that later. I know you will.
I know.
So try the chili and see what you think.
I've got to tell you, I am a massive fan of peanut butter. I really am.
So, Neil, what inspired you to do the chili peanut butter? Is it just people asking for it?
No, it's actually an idea of my colleague. You'll notice Perrin's Fine Foods. Well, my colleague Bill Perrin is actually the guy that makes the peanut butter. Ah. So, unfortunately, he couldn't be here today.
Well, thank you, Bill. We're really enjoying it.
He's actually making it at the moment. So, and that's what you'll find him doing on any given day. So, it was actually his idea. And I think in the artisan food world these days, if you don't do something with chili in it, then you're sort of, you know,
you're behind the curve.
You are, I'm
you're
afraid.
Behind the curve.
You are. So, we gave it a go. And, well, we'll get the verdict as Paul chomps through his second or third.
Now,
bite.
I'm eating. Yeah, you're not going to get a word out of him. Oh, no. I've just tasted that a tiny bit on a teaspoon. Wow, that's good.
But yeah,
that's
good.
Probably the top level of what I can cope with chili. First thing in the morning, wow, that would wake you up, wouldn't it? Bit of toast and chili peanut
it
butter.
It would. And I'm glad that you can cope with that because when you make a chili based product, you're like, well,
how do we pitch it?
Yeah. Like a chili, people going to want this, then you've got to make it like blow your head off. Or if it's too mild, they're going to go, oh, you know, can hardly taste it. The reason why it doesn't blow your head off is because the fats in the peanut butter, the healthy fats, I might add, slow down the delivery of chili. Because if that was, you know, if you were to take chili in water or something like that, it's going to hit your taste buds really quickly. But in a thick sort of compound like that, you get it nice and evenly and nice heat. So
what's your verdict on the chili peanut butter?
I'm absolutely, absolutely addicted to that already. And I've only eaten half a slice.
You're going to take that whole tub home.
I'm going to take the whole tub home. That to me is a perfect late evening snack. I like tangy food. I like chili. I like curries. I like hot food. That has every food group for me in it in one go.
It's everything you like.
I do. And funnily enough, the two tastes are fairly separate.
It's interesting because I'm tasting a lot of peanuts in that.
I mean, that's what
I
mean.
I'm getting a chili hit, but the chili hit isn't overpowering it at all. I can definitely taste.
That's exactly what
roasted,
I mean.
Roasted peanuts.
I totally agree. It's peanut butter on toast with a chili hit afterwards, and you can actually get the separate flavour of both. It's a fascinating product. Absolutely love it. Going to have
He's
another
have
bite.
Some more. So our lovely Mr. Perrin is back at the farm, so to speak, or making peanut butter. Tell us exactly how you make it.
Right, okay. Well, part of the reason why we believe the quality is so good is for the selection process with the nuts. So obviously, like any company, we're quite particular on where we buy our nuts from. But when they've been roasted, it's only then that you get to see if there are any bad nuts. So all the peanuts look the same before you roast them.
Uh-huh.
But you'll get some really dark-looking ones when you've roasted them. And obviously, a big company that's sort of throwing tons and tons through a machine a day isn't going to get a chance to be able to pick out the bad ones. But we actually do. We pick out the ones that go a little
so
bit dark.
So the bad ones might be a little bit sour or will that affect the taste then?
It's actually the nuts are fine, but some nuts will tend to somehow get over roasted, and they're the ones that can give peanut butters a bit of a burnt flavour. Right. So you take those out, and actually the nuts we're buying at the moment are very, very good, and we hardly get any ones at all we have to pick out. So at the moment we're really lucky, we can just almost assume that they're all going to be all right, but we do check them And that's why you get always.
And that's this dedication, isn't it, to getting this absolutely right.
It is.
And if
yeah.
you don't get the right ingredients, you'll never make something taste nice. You have mm-hmm. to do false things around the edges in order to make it taste nice. But if you start with great ingredients, that's the key.
That's right.
Just going back to the, I've just finished. Sorry, I had to finish that. there was no way out of that. I had to finish the whole thing of the chili peanut butter. Do you know what it reminded me of a little bit? Many, many years ago, I used to work in Holland, and you had an Indonesian peanut table that you get in restaurants, Indonesian restaurants. Mm. Indonesia had a big affinity with Dutch colonists. And you get these peanut curries and things like that. And that was very reminiscent of some of the dishes that you get in those Indonesian restaurants.
Yeah, you get satays, don't you, which are peanut-based.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, but we kind of westernised satays a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
The original peanut tables, you used to go into an Indonesian restaurant in Amsterdam or whatever, and they'd lay out, what would you call it, a bit like a mezze in a Greek restaurant, where they have loads and loads of dishes, and peanut sauce was a staple of a lot of the dishes. Yeah. That chili one...
That remind you of it.
We kind of brought some of that back. Yeah, absolutely.
So you're really, really selecting these peanuts. Whereabouts do you get peanuts in the world?
I think the global quantity of nuts produced is about 49 million tons a year. So quite a lot of that comes from India, China, America do a bit, and the South Americas as well. We actually get ours from Argentina. They just tend to be the best producers of it. We've tried other nuts, and at the moment we're just getting such good quality from them. Mm. Sadly, their crop's been hit by a frost this year.
Okay.
So,
on the search.
We're all right for the moment, but we'll see how that goes. But when you buy peanuts, you don't necessarily know they're going to be good for peanut butter until you start roasting them. Right. So it's all about this roasting procedure, really. Yeah. And of course, roasting increases the concentration of the a lot of the beneficial nutrients in them by quite a lot. So
I go into coffee roasters sometimes, and they've got these big coffee roasting machines. Is it one of those types of machines that you use?
No, we actually have a device that just cooks the peanuts in the oil, and then we actually dry them. We air dry them.
Okay.
And that's when the selection of the bad nuts sort of occurs.
So you've got like a big frying pan, or I'm trying to visualise, you see, what this
procedure
is like.
It's a bit like that. I mean, I don't want to use the word deep fat fry, but it's kind of like just a big glorified version of one of those, really.
Mm. Use rapeseed oil, best quality rapeseed oil, and then roast them, literally. And I presume if you've got batches, the time would sometimes differ, just depends, I guess you're really looking for consistency, but it's very much handmade.
Yes, it's the roasting time that's the key, and we actually go off the colour of the nuts. So you'll get another batch of peanuts in from a producer, and they'll take a little longer to go brown. So getting them the right colour.
Can I ask some peanut related questions there?
Because
I'm kind of fascinated by this. First of all, how do peanuts grow? In what way are they in the wild?
They actually grow like potatoes. So you pull them up out of the ground. So most of the time you'll hear them referred to as ground nuts. So you pull them up out of the ground, and then you'll see attached on the end there'll be like monkey nuts. So there'll be the nuts in the shell.
Right.
I'm
glad you said that, because I wasn't entirely sure, but I thought I was, that they are actually ground nuts. Because back in the 1950s, there was a huge move in Africa to get them to grow massive crops of ground nuts, and it just didn't work for some reason. I don't know why. Okay, so ground nuts, they come in what we know as monkey nuts when they're in the shell.
Yes.
When you import them from Argentina or wherever you're sourcing them from at the moment, do you import them in the shell, or do you get them shelled?
No, they're out of the shell. When you crack open a monkey nut, you'll notice that there's a red skin on it.
Yep.
You can buy nuts like that. We actually do buy nuts like that as well, and just sell them on their own. But we buy them with the skins off.
Right.
So some peanut butter producers will keep the skins on and roast them. But we think that adds a bitter flavour to it. Most of those producers will then balance the flavour out with sugar and something like that. So you don't want to do that. We like to keep it natural. So we buy them blanched. So just, the peanuts with the skin off.
That's why you get this really roasty, roasted nut flavour, and not burnt, is it, Paul?
It's not at all.
And it's not sour. And that's why you don't need sugar in it. Because it's just so simple. It's so good. Do you want to try this last piece of toast?
Do I?
Well, I'm not so sure I'm keen on this. I have to say this to you, Neil, because I'm not a great fan of chocolate, but this is chocolate peanut butter. I guess you could say that's like Nutella. I think you're supposed to call it Nutella, actually.
We discussed this earlier. You mustn't use the N-word.
It doesn't look anything like that. It looks like peanut butter a different colour.
And it doesn't taste anything like that either.
Okay, I'm going to have a little taste as well. And say the consistency looks exactly like peanut butter. It just happens to be much darker brown. And it's got chocolate in it and a little bit of cocoa fat. And we've got rapeseed oil again. And again, why did you make this? Is it just decided a bit of new product development or did you get asked?
Well, actually, I haven't been involved with the company, you know, since it started. So Bill was making this peanut butter before I was involved. The chocnut was around before I involved. So... I think he just wanted to do. He loves peanuts. We think they're great for many reasons, and we didn't want to do the obvious sort of nut butter thing because there's a very popular one already on the market, which we've just mentioned. Yeah. So we wanted to do a peanut one, and chocolate and peanuts go great, you know. So.
It doesn't taste anything like that. It doesn't have the texture, and as you say, it's not a butter. This is about chocolate peanuts. It's not about. Butter at all. No. Quite crunchy, isn't it? Lovely and crunchy.
It was delicious. And I
actually, not as sweet as I thought. I don't mind that. I thought I'd not like it.
The other nut-related chocolate spread is not something I would eat. I would actually eat that because...
It's not sweet. It's like just really nice.
Like you, I don't actually have a sweet tooth. I have a savoury tooth. Mm. And I'm not a big fan of chocolate, funnily enough. But that is incredibly edible, even for someone like me. Mm. It's a very different consistency from other chocolate nut spreads.
Mm. It's a peanut butter.
This is going to sound really sycophantic and cheesy, but it was the very thing that came to me when I took a bite out of it. It tasted wholesome.
I think all these Perrins foods do, though. Mm. That's what comes to mind for me, wholesome.
But specifically for a chocolate-based one, it's not the kind of word you'd normally use about it because it's chocolate based, and I think what would normally happen in other spreads is they chuck lots of sugar in it, and that clearly hasn't had a lot done to it other than some chocolate-fied peanuts.
No, keep it simple, and you get the best flavours. Mm.
Exactly, simple and great ingredients. Mm. And just moving quickly on because I know we're going to run out of time on this because we love peanut butter and we're just talking about it so much and. Paul's eating yet more. I know that you're very, very, keen on protecting the environment and the environmental credentials of the company is really important. How do you consider the environment for every product in the range? Because I know it even goes through to your packaging.
Yes, I mean, we keep our packaging minimalistic. It's always been that way. The products that we sell and the products that we make are as natural as possible, and we like to sort of convey that in every part of the business. In terms of the oil, we use rapeseed oil because it's got beneficial health properties, and we want to avoid using any oils that have a detrimental effect on the environment. Mm. I mean, actually, we can roast quite a lot of peanuts in a very small amount of oil, so we don't go through tons of this stuff. It's a little barrel will go a long way, so. Yeah, and we just recycle as much as possible. We don't get any returned products and things like that.
Really, I'm not surprised by that at all.
No, I mean, why is that? You don't get any peanut butter going out of date now
because it's too delicious. That's why. Far too delicious. And where can people get this stuff? What's the website they should go on to? Can they order on the website?
Typically, we're a wholesaler, so we wholesale to retailers. Mm. So I'd say that if you're listening in the Ashford area, Perry Court Farm on the A28.
Oh, absolutely.
Go in there. They've got they've got our entire range of products that we do. So they've got a couple of hundred.
That's me sorted
things.
Then.
Yeah, you know
get
where to
down
get
there,
call.
Get your peanut butter from there. And there's lots of other local producers as well. So.
And if we'd say that if you're really keen on tasting this and your local farm shop or your local retailer doesn't have it, they should be asking for it, shouldn't they?
They can get it stocked.
Really delicious, I think, Paul. And what's so good is that everybody at the company, Neil especially, is really thinking about the environment, packaging, and actually that all comes out in the taste somehow.
It does. I wasn't trying to be funny. When you bite into that, it just tastes wholesome. there's a freshness about it. You can tell instantly that it's not mass produced.
Yeah, and for me, I think the important thing is just the plain peanut butter. It's 98% peanuts, and some of the other ones you're talking about 80%. So that's a huge difference.
Oh dear. Somebody round here finished that plate of...
There's nothing but crumbs left on that.
There isn't, actually. I don't know how that happened.
We've run out of time. I want to talk more about peanuts, but run out of time. And I thought that was absolutely delicious. So thank you very, very much to Neil Samuel. You've got to try their peanut butter, Perrin's Fine Foods, and Greg Wells from the London Craft Beer Festival.
Absolutely.
And, of course, our lovely section on chili burritos as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, so been another packed show on the Food Talk Show.
It has. It has. And we're going to fight each other, aren't we, to take some of these tubs home?
No.
Of peanut butter. No, I haven't got a chance.
I've already purloined the chili one. You're not having that back.
Put it in his pocket already.
Absolutely. I've got it. No, yeah. It's lovely.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us, Neil. Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah, good to see you, Neil. And thank you, everybody else, as Sue says, for joining us on the Food Talk Show. We'll be back, as always, with you on Channel Radio at 4 p.m. next Thursday with the Food Talk Show. But in the interim, have a lovely week and we will see you all again soon.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.